And aloha, this is Cindy Palos, and you're listening to the Travel Angel Radio Show here live in the studio with Jerry Downer, my co-host from Kalahani Travel.
Hello, everybody.
Aloha. And Uncle George Kamoko.
Hey, aloha. Studio. Nice to be here.
So in, good to have you.
Beautiful Maui down in Ka'oi Radio.
We're going to be talking to you because you were on the road for extended times, and we're going to talk a little about some of the places you've traveled to. I don't think we have enough time to talk to all the places you've traveled to, and a little bit about a musician's point of view when you're on the road. And Jerry Downer from K-L-A-H-A-N-I. I'm always going to spell Kalahani Travel because, sometimes people don't know how to spell
Don't know how to spell
it. It's a hard one to spell. And, of course, we're excited because you've got some great deals going on, as you always do in October. You're going to be hosting a cruise, aren't you?
We're going to be hosting one that's going from Tahiti. Actually, it's going to do the Society Islands, and then it's going to go on to Fiji. So it's a 14-day one.
On the Paul Gauguin.
Paul Gauguin, yes.
One of my favorite cruise lines. It really is one of my very favorite. I've cruised on a few, and I actually like the Paul Gauguin really well because the food
special.
Is so good. And when you take a cruise on the Paul Gauguin, you get all of your drinks, all of your tips, of course, all the food, and everything included, except for tours. And, of course, being a small cruise line with only 334 people, you have this huge staff. It's almost one-to-one. It's great service. And you don't have a big problem getting off the ship. There's no long waits in line. And you can also have those great, when you're cruising to the islands, they have wonderful things. You can take your own little seaworthy things out, you know, whether it's kayaks
or, and the paddle boards and all the fun stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you have that you're going to be doing? Tell us about the islands in October.
The one in October, that's a 14-day one. It starts at $47.21 a person. And that's a 14-day cruise. It's going to Tahiti, so it's actually going to do Moorea and Bora Bora and the private Motu before it goes on to Fiji, and it's going to stop at three or four places in Fiji as well. So really a neat cruise.
And there are still going to be some really great deals. In March, there's only a couple left.
We've got a couple of cabins left in March for the seven-day ones. The Kama'aina rate is $21.95 for the balcony, and it's only $14.95 for the window.
That's really reasonable.
It is. Well, when you break down the price per night, thinking you're getting these beautiful rooms with the wonderful views and the meals and the drinks, you couldn't go to Tahiti.
Try and stay in Tahiti. That's right.
Yeah, there's no way because Tahiti's expensive. You've been to Tahiti a few times.
Yes, way back in. I've been there in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s.
And it's changed much?
It's changed a lot. Yeah.
And it's still small. It's kind of like Molokai. When I went Raiatea, it reminded me of Molokai a little bit.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Maybe even smaller in some ways, you know, but. But, of course, French, with the French language and French influence, with a little bit of the food, you know, and the black pearls and the...
All that stuff. And we just had 30 vanilla. People come back from Tahiti this last week. So they're all phoning up and raving about it. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I went, and it was wonderful. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it immensely. You told a great story before we got on there. George has more great stories than anyone I've ever met. Are you saying, oh, yeah, my dad went there and brought home a Tahitian princess.
Well, what happened is my dad worked for Fish and Wildlife, and he played a lot of music. You know, he was probably he went on this boat called the Gilbert. They take out of Kiwala Basin, and somehow or another, I guess he got himself in trouble because next thing I know, you know, he's still on the road. Like he goes out and he stays on the road for like 6 months. You know, and sometime in the 6 months, we get a visit by the Tahitian princess, and she brings an entourage of about 25 people, and they're waiting for my dad to get home because they're going to get married or something like that. And you know, my dad was a single guy at the time, you know, so I'm thinking, oh man, and we actually had to clean out the garages, move the cars out for this whole family to move in. It stayed for us about a couple of weeks. And
they all spoke French, so you probably didn't know how to talk to them.
Yeah, speak French, and everything's... there's an R or something inside there, you know, when they're trying to talk English and stuff. So that was my experience with the Tahitian princess. And then later, when my dad did come home, you know, he gave her... somehow he convinced her that he should marry her. his brother. So she ended
she
up.
She should marry.
Yeah. So she ended up with his younger brother, Uncle Gilbert.
Wow.
So there's Tahitian blood in your family.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a Tahitian royal blood.
Yeah, and then I think I don't know what happened to the entourage, but I think they all eventually went home except for the Tahitian princess.
Think your father's brother was going to pay for 25 people to be living with him.
Yeah. Well, we had a farm in Waimanalo, so, you know, they had enough food. And actually, they helped out a lot on the farm.
Oh, Waimanalo, yeah, beautiful. Yeah, yeah.
He had about, you know, maybe about 20 acres over there. So and it was more like Tahiti, too, I think, for them. You know, they had a lot of bananas and taro and all that kind. So
well, yeah. Actually, a lot of the agriculture looks a lot similar to Hawaii. When you see the agriculture, you see them. You see the papaya trees, you see the mango trees, right? And you see.
I think that's why we feel so at home there, and they do here. So. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. then, you know, over the years, though, the diet has gotten a lot better. You know, I remember going in the 60s and the 70s, and a lot of the Wahidas are so beautiful. They, you know, they mix with Tahitian, and they got Chinese in blood, and some, you know, Caucasian blood, and some of them have Indian blood because there's a lot of Indians from India. You know, but when they open their mouth, man, all the teeth are rotten.
Uh-huh.
And the reason for that is they used to eat a lot of lemon with lime with their teeth, you know. But after the, you know, over the years, their diet has changed. So they use as much lemon and lion.
Kind of interesting, similar hula, but a little different. They're very usually, the ones I saw were very tall, a little taller than the typical Hawaiians, and very lithe, you know, very graceful, very mm-hmm. graceful. Mm-hmm. So the hula, watching them do the hula was very nice. And I know hula halaus from here and there go back and forth, you know, because there is the Tahitian connection to Hawaii, of course, the Polynesian connection as well.
And so they have a between Koholawe and Maui, there's a place called Kiala Kahiki, which means the pathway to Tahiti. That's an ala nui that goes all the way down. So that's the one that you know, the Hokulea took on the way down to Tahiti.
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful. Well, so you are on the road a lot, and you travel a lot. And you just before you got on the air, he was telling us, I asked him if he ever went to China. And you said, oh, yeah, a lot of times I played for the premier of China.
then it was Deng Kai-shek or whatever. You know, happened is that at the time, I had a friend. I used to play the music at the Mauna Kea Beach Hotel, and he worked for KLM. He was one of the founders of KLM, that airplane. That's
yes, a KLM, Dutch airplane, right?
And he had about 10,000 workers that's trying to keep employed. So what he would do is take old airplanes, refurbish them, and then resell them again. So he was doing all this. No. So he was So I had about 10,000 employees in Amsterdam. So we had a deal where China was looking, you know, to buy more aircraft. So we're gonna sell them all this aircraft. And I had a connection because the granddaughter of the premier went to college with my wife at the time in Oregon State University. They're both archaeologists.
Really?
Yeah. So they were roommates. So we were best friends. That's how we got to know. And then went over. Unfortunately, it was about the same time. Remember when Aloha Airlines had that that
problem with
the airlines
the
and the tough blow, and it was right here on Maui that it happened.
Oh, the top came off. Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right here in Maui, and one of my friends lost their best friend over there. She was stewardess, one of my classmates.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so anyway, everything fell through after that.
But you did go to China.
Yeah, I did go to
did
China.
Did you play for them?
Oh yeah, I did. I did play for the.
What did they? That's probably the first time they'd heard Hawaiian music.
Well, what they wanted to do is they wanted to hear. You know, we was trying to find a connection, and you know, the only song that they knew in the Chinese, you know, and they was playing a pipa and all these different instruments, was something called O Susanna.
Well, that actually has some of those Chinese. They have a different scale,
right?
And as you were singing, I realized there's a couple of notes that could be in the Chinese scale in that. So yeah, it's interesting. They know O Susanna.
So that's what.
Did you play O Susanna?
Yeah, well, I played O Susanna with them. Of course, I did my own Hawaiian songs, and they wanted Aloha Oi, you know, some of the classics and stuff like that. But the song that we ended up playing together was O Susanna.
So funny. And at that time, as I was saying, I was there I went there in 89 and about 87. But you were there in the 70s.
I was there in the 70s. They had just opened it up. And the next time, I think I was there 2 years later, 3 years later.
It was so different 82. Then.
Those days, everybody was still dressed in Mao Zedong outfits. And it's interesting, too, because we took a boat, too, and when you go on the boat, you know, they're all just like Americans with all the jewelry. But as soon as they pass over the border, everybody changes back into the Monty Tongue outfits.
Really?
Take off all the rings, all the jewelry comes off, everything comes back. And so they were really conservative at the time. And then later on, I went back in the 90s, and everybody has regular clothes. I remember even the thing that impressed me then, even when I went, is the first time I went over, there was no trees. Not even one tree, because everybody had used the trees. They cut down the trees for fuel. So and then I remember, I don't know if you want me to tell this, but at Red Square, you couldn't even walk because it was like spit. Everybody spit. The Chinese spit on the ground.
They do, yeah.
And it was like you couldn't even walk. You were sliding across on all this spit, you know. I'm not kidding. It was really awful.
And they do this on the trains, too.
Yeah.
You find that on the trains. They spit a lot.
Okay. Yeah. Then the next time I came, they made it death punishment if you spit.
Did they?
Oh, and they made it death punishment if you cut down a tree. So then the next time I went over in the 90s, there was a lot of trees. There was a lot, no spit in the Red Square anymore and all other places and stuff like that. So it was a whole different.
I remember the trains when I went in the 80s. It was hard sleeper and soft sleeper. It wasn't first and second class. Hard sleeper and soft sleeper. And when you go to the bathroom, it is literally a hole in the ground that you see the tracks as you, and people do spit, and they did at that time anyway.
Yeah.
It must have been before it was a death penalty, but they did spit in. And I remember I was sleeping overnight. It was a long train ride somewhere, the lady came with the mop, and she was mopping the whole bottom. And then she takes this dirty mop, and you know how they have on a train that thing where you're supposed to have your tea in the middle, little table there where you're supposed to have your food and your. She takes that mop from the ground and wipes it over the table top. And I'm thinking, that mop has been in the spit on the ground, and she's wiping the table top with it. They didn't have any curtains or closed doors. So because they call Caucasians like me, you wouldn't be a big nose, but I was a big nose. I mean, my nose is big, but not that big. But they call all white people big nose.
Mm.
And so they would, you know, people were coming. I was waking up, and there were Chinese people gathered around looking at me. Now, it was way out, you know, in the boonies, way out of Beijing. But they were staring at me, big nose, and it's like, they're standing around, and I'm going, there's all these people just standing there, looking at me and pointing big nose, you know.
Well, we were lucky because we had an entourage with the premier.
Oh, I bet. That must have been amazing.
And actually, you know, it's based on status, because my wife at the time was a state senator, and
Your wife was a state senator?
Yeah.
George, I never knew that about you. I've known you for years. I didn't know you were married.
She was almost, you know, she ran for governor, too.
What's her name?
Senator Malama Solomon from the Big Island. We used to farm and ranch together, you know. So anyway, even in the entourage, because I was a lowly musician, she got to walk in the front with the entourage and everything. And I was back way in the back with the soldiers and with the generals and whatever, because I didn't have enough status to walk. I was like 100 people behind. It's based all on status. It's kind of weird.
So was it a different train than the regular train that they were in? Did they have their own train?
No. I'm just talking about walking around
from
one thing to another. I was interested in, you know, like methane gas and that kind of stuff. So I actually brought back some of the technology that I use on my farm.
Oh, really?
I went to this one village that had 1,200 people, and they had, you know, pigs and ducks and everything like that. And they ran everything from methane that they produced from their pigs and all the, you know, the whole village went to this one place where they used the bathroom and everything like that. It was kind of like really recycling everything that they had. And then they would take all the effluent that they got from this and take it back in the fields. And that's how they fertilize all their rice and vegetables.
I remember seeing that out in the, you know, it was interesting. One of the tours, the first time I just went a regular tour. And then later I said, no, I have to do my own tour. If you had 10 people at that time, more, you could create your own tour. But the first one I did, I wanted to see the green tea production. So they take us out. And I'm looking, and there is waste water going through all these fields of the green tea. But then they say they spray it. They were spraying it with DDT. This is back, of course, in the
80s.
They were and it's supposed to be the highest level of green tea that was really expensive, but it was being sprayed with these pesticides and used as fertilizer, human excrement, right there in the fields. And I'm going, I don't know if you're seeing that, if I want to drink green tea. I mean, it's like, and there was expensive green tea. But, I mean, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I know they've obviously have grown a lot since. And at that time, of course, everyone was on bicycle. It was bicycles, bicycles, bicycles.
I remember seeing one guy, it seemed like it was six or seven people on the same bicycle, and he had chickens in the... in a little cages, and then he had a little baby pig and all kinds of stuff. And this one guy was paddling all his family. It was they were all hanging onto this one bicycle. I couldn't believe it. It's like a circus or something, you know.
I remember going out with this bus to a place way far out, and we're going through this, you know, area where down south where there's water buffalo everywhere down south.
Right.
And going through this road, small road, and there's all this grass, it looks like, or wheat. And so they put their wheat on the road to let the buses drive over them to break up and sheath the wheat. And that's the way they sheathed the wheat. And it was a very interesting, one of the more interesting trips, that and going to Tibet. But that's maybe one place you haven't played. You haven't played in Tibet, have you?
Actually, I did go over there.
Oh, no. He did.
Yeah.
Like a Conda stump. Someone can see where George has not been. You did go to Tibet. Wait, tell us about that one.
Well, it was. I went to Tibet mainly to share. I'm just trying to think of. We went to share. There's a bunch of guys that I met on the road at one of the world music festivals, and they were doing something called throat singing. And then,
well, that's where you can do two octaves at once.
Right. And then we were with Uncle Richard Hopi and stuff like that, learning how to, you know, about falsetto, that kind of stuff. That was it. And the thing I remember most is that drinking their water that came off of their it was just flowing, but their water was always white. You know, it's like white inside. And they called it the milk from the mountains. And the reason it was white is because it was all this lime and this minerals that was inside of the water.
Yeah.
And the water tasted really, really, really rich. I remember that. You know?
Yeah.
So that was the thing that I always turned on mostly was their water.
Yeah.
You know, over there. But we went up to do some collaboration with throat singers way back in.
There was a tour that came and brought them here. And it is amazing to hear. They literally can do two octaves while they're doing their chanting.
Right.
And I've tried to even get come close, and it's our harmonic tone, actually.
Right.
Yeah. So I do want to mention you've got all these great new products out. Richard Ho, P.E.'s new one. You also have Sterling Seaton's new one out, and the Ukulele Boys. I don't know where with everything you've been doing there's been time to do more, but you have all these wonderful people and your new release. This is a really amazing one, and this is something everyone would love. It's called The Seeds of Aloha.
Well, I've been really blessed. You know, back in 2012 or something, I was nominated. I was the only Hawaiian got nominated for the Grammys again in this new category called Hawaiian American Regional
Roots. Yes, a tough category.
Yeah, it was. And then I got written up by John Berger. He did a four-page article. Actually, he came with me, and we went visited the farm. I was in the Institute of Hawaiian Music directing, so we went to visit the students. And then I had some Punana Leo kids come over, so we did an afternoon ukulele thing at my house and at the farm. And then, you know, we went to gather vegetables and whatever, and, you know, share food. And then we actually went over to my show in Apili, and so he spent like 2 days just following me around.
Oh, really? Did he stay with you?
Yeah. Well, he stayed in Apili Kai, you know. Mm-hmm. We worked it out so he could stay, and he brought like another person who was his cameraman and all this. So he did this four-page article that was in a Star Advertiser, and from that article, that when it came out, I got calls from all over, from New York City, from Las Vegas, from L.A., all these film producers wanted to do a film of me, you know. So I thought about it, and I said, well, you know, the thing is, if anybody should do a film, it should be Dave Barry, who's filming my show every week. He was, you know, and not only that, Dave knew about, you know, he would come up, help out on the farm, shovel manure, pick vegetables, all of that, you know, lawnmower, weed whack. So most of the people came to film me. I mean, people came from Germany, Switzerland, Japan. Even I had a crew from China, too, you know, that actually filmed me at my farm.
Wow.
But they're not really interested in the farming or the Hawaiian culture. They only want the music. So they get this lopsided, you know, view of who I am. And what I wanted to do is give, you know, I feel like the music is maybe 10 to 15% of my life. The rest of it has to do with being sustainable, Hawaiian culture, growing food, sharing food, teaching. So that I wanted to share all of that too. So lucky for me, Dave said he'll do it how he wanted to do it. And so I asked one of these filmmakers from L.A., did they have the money? They're going to grant grants. He said, well, they have this thing called Kickstarted. And we kickstarted. So she taught me how to do it, and I shared it with Dave. And Dave, actually, we raised about $60,000. They gave us 6 weeks to do it. I think we raised it in 2 weeks. It was amazing. It was based on my mailing list. And, you know, people sent you know, $50, $20, and we said whoever contributes, we give them a CD when it's done. And those who contributed more, like for, I think if you donated like $1,000, then we give you a trip to the farm, and you could spend lunch, I cook lunch from everything going on the farm. And then if you donate like $5,000 or more, then we do a private event for you, any place at your calling, you know, so. And it was unbelievable. In fact, I just finished one of the last ones. I did a private event at Hunakoai Church for this one donator came from Seattle.
Now, I have to say here, folks, Kickstarter is wonderful, but unless you have a big mailing list and people that really love you, it ain't going to happen. I'd say 90% of the people who try Kickstarter campaigns, it does not work for. But George has a massive mailing list and people who adore him.
Well, the thing is, I've been really blessed over the years, and I started this mailing list thing. I would recommend this to, I just did a talk at the Institute of Hawaiian Music. And I told the students that your mailing list is like printing money. That's how I feel it is, you know. So, and I don't use it all the time. I'm very discerning how I use it. Like, you know, at one time our list was over, you know, 1.5 million. But we've actually got it. And before, I used to, you know, actually use real mail. I mean, I'd have everybody write their name in a little book, I guess. And I wouldn't go out and solicit it. If anybody walked, when I was playing music, and they walked up to me on the stage, I would have them sign my guest book. Just a name, your address, and your phone number. So, and the zip code is really important. So then, you know, so let's say I went to play, which I did in San Diego. So what I did is I spent time, made a postcard. And lucky thing, I was teaching special motivation at the time. So I had my students fill out, you know, all these postcards. And we mailed them out to maybe about, and it costs money. You're going to spend big money. So I sent them out to maybe about 5,000 of the people in San Diego in my database. We didn't have email in those days. This is like the 80s, yeah? Right. And guess what? Out of maybe 2,000 people at that concert, I'd say 1,151 of them came from my mailing list personal, that had listened to me before. And I was playing with Kenny G at the time, and I was playing with Kilo B-Man. So it was a huge thing, and that night I sold over $10,000 worth of CDs venue. So it worked for me at the time. So then nowadays we have, you know, emails and Facebook and all the social media. So let's say I'm doing like I'm going to be going on tour now in the Bay Area. So I'll just send out an email, not to the whole mailing list, but to the ones in the Bay Area. And if I'm going to do one in Redding, then I'll send up Northern California, Oregon. And I'll do the same thing when I go to Rochester, Minneapolis, or whatever, you know, so that you don't tap on your list all the time. Then when you really need to use it, it's because if you you don't want to be like spam.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Then that's how we sell our albums and our stuff. So it's been really helpful for me in all the things I'm doing, you know, that when we launch.
And the Seeds of Aloha is on your website, Kahumoko.
Kahumoko.com, yeah.
And your Sterling Seaton and the Ukulele Boys there too,
yes,
as well as Richard Hopi's piece.
And Uncle Richard's piece, and that's another story in itself. And we did the same thing for Uncle Richard, and also for Dennis Kamakai, and we raised, you know, $60,000 for their campaigns as well.
Wow, for their tour?
No, just for their CD. What I did is I made a series called The Masters of Hawaiian Music. So we did Uncle Richard first, and then now we did Dennis. We finished Dennis's one. And now we're going to work on Brother Nolan, and we're going to work on Martin Pahinui. And basically, I just want the artists to tell their story from their point of view, how they got to do the music and where it came from, that kind of thing. So, you know, eventually we'll have a legacy to leave behind.
Well, so, you definitely know. are building that. I mean, you were telling me about Uncle Richard's son died a few weeks ago.
Yes.
You cooked up, you said 4,000 people came.
It started like 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and the last person walked through the door at 11:30. So that means people were waiting in line for 2.5, 3, 4, 5 hours.
Wow.
The line went all the way from where was the name of the place?
Ballard.
From Ballard all the way to McDonald's over on Dairy Road. That's how far the line and the cars are parked. It's unbelievable.
Wow, and you cooked up this food because the storm had hit your farm.
Well, there's a lot of people who cooked. You know, I ended up I killed about 20 ducks and 20 chickens, and we used about 10 chickens and maybe about 5-6 ducks for Uncle's party. Then my friend Eddie Tanaka, we were doing a gig up at Yale Theater, so he brought over a whole bunch of fish. And you know, ukulele boys, there, you know, we taught them how to fish, hunt, and all like that. So Peter Diaquino ended up doing the lomi oio. It's hard because you have to scrape all. It's a bonefish. You have to scrape all the fish, and then Sterling Seaton helped me roast the ducks on an open fire and all like that. And then I made the chicken long rice. And then we had about 30 pounds of squid that came. Well, I was the only one. I probably contributed less than 10% of the food.
Wow.
And people came from Kenai. I mean, they bought, you know, we supplied maybe 50 pounds of taro poi, maybe 50 pounds of, 30 to 50 pounds of ulu poi. But the guys from Kenai bought hundreds of pounds of poi.
Wow.
I mean, fish came out of the woodwork. You wouldn't have any food. I mean, one of my favorite things to eat is raw liver. And these guys went up to Nakasone and probably bought, you know, 9 livers, because we had over 9 gallons of raw liver at this thing. I mean, it was just remarkable. People went from Hana, sent the hoi'o, fern shoots, you know. So it was really a labor of love from everybody, not only me. I was just one guy contributing to this whole thing, but people brought stuff, and people, you know, would go home and make 500 lao laos themselves. Like, I made 30 pounds of squid, just the squid alone, probably, and then probably about 200 pounds of luau leaf, and probably about, you know, 5 to 10 gallons of coconut milk. That's how much stuff.
Oh,
I mean, this is just saying, you know, but that much aloha. In fact, I'm thinking about writing a song for Ramsey about this aloha that he brought out, you know, everybody, you know, and just people that came down to the village.
Ramsey's son. Yeah.
You know.
You should write a song.
Yeah.
It would be good. And you should sing it with Richard.
And then the song would be called The Food of Aloha, you know?
The Food of Aloha.
Yeah, that other people contributed, you know, because it just loved. And Ramsey used to help me, actually, when I used to raise pigs before with Uncle Richard. We live our subdivision. You can't raise chickens, fighting chickens, roosters, or pigs. So ended up, Ramsey was to be the one who would kalua of our pigs for us, you know? Uncle Richard's in our peaks, and then, you know.
Richard's just down the road from you in Kaka'aloi. Yeah,
he's
big
about
family.
Three miles. He's in the village right next to the ocean, and I'm actually about 5 miles from him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but by bird's throw, probably only
it's
about
closer.
2 miles. Yeah. But by the winding road, about 5 miles, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And his family, actually, some of them do the shave ice and different things right there.
His wife does that right there in a pink wagon in the village, yeah.
Yeah.
And he also, you know, caters to a lot of, you know, like I said, Maui Nui Botanical Garden will have a fundraiser. And he'll make, you know, kalo pig and cabbage, plate lunches and stuff.
Oh, really?
Like that,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, both of us, you know, we know how to cook really good. You can just look at our bodies.
You've lost a lot of weight, George.
Well, I've been trying to, you know, eat more healthy and stuff like that.
How do you
that.
Do that on the road? I mean, because I know you've been watching. You've lost, there's pictures of you on your website where you're about 60 pounds heavier.
Yeah, well, what happens is that what we do is, instead of eating, you know, Denny's and Waffle House, whatever is open at 2 o'clock in the morning, we actually prepare ahead of time, and we try to go to, like, you know, Whole Foods or Trader Joe's, you know, places that have or even a shopping center and stuff, and we buy fresh fruits and vegetables, and
good for you,
we prepare them as we go along the way. Yeah,
so you know, it's interesting because here you are, and you, I don't think we'll say the amount of money you made in the last year, but you did well.
Yeah.
But you were really smart. Of course, your wonderful wife Nancy.
Right.
Very smart lady.
Right.
And also a hula dancer and the sister of George Winston, who George Winston's piano player, and he has Dancing Cat Records as well. But she kind of helps you keep track of all this stuff. But it can be expensive. And I know a lot of musicians that go on the road and don't land up making that much money because the cost of traveling and the cost of hotels and the cost of other musicians and the cost of your food. I mean, a lot of musicians don't walk away with a lot. Well, I mean, unless you get a lot of CD sales and stuff.
Well, we're really blessed, you know, because I think the CD sales were actually better in the 90s than it is now because people download and stuff like that. Like, you know, when I went on tour, I'd sell between 150 and 250 CDs every night.
You That's know? Amazing.
Right now, we sell like a case, which is about 50 CDs, we're lucky.
Really? You know,
so it's a different kind of a market.
Yeah. Hmm.
But what the other thing we do is, you know, I try to use miles as much as I can. I try to cheap fly
as cheap as I can. And you were saying something, you do a corporate account for Hawaiian Airlines.
Yeah, we have a corporate account with Hawaiian Airlines. And what's good about that is if we have to change flights or anything like that, you know, there's no change fees, so we do that. And we're lucky because we have a show every week, every Wednesdays and Thursdays in Napilika. In fact, our guest artist is going to be Herb Otto Jr. You know,
but Herb Otto's great.
Yeah, so he's going to be this Wednesday and Thursday. So every week we have a different artist. So we bring all these artists from different, you know, from Honolulu, some from the mainland, whatever.
Some from Big Island.
And so this corporate account has really helped us a lot. And then the other thing too, you know, I try to go the cheapest way as possible. Sometimes, I don't go first class. I just go. But sometimes we're really lucky. There's room in first class or something, and the stewardesses or the stewards know who we are and say, hey, you want? So they bump us up to first class, you know. So we've been lucky that way. And sometimes we're playing music, you know, in the lounge
waiting
area,
around,
waiting around, and they notice, and the people really like that. So
it's really a wonderful thing sometimes. I mean, almost always, actually, if I'm in a waiting room, someone brings out an ukulele here in Hawaii and it starts playing, and it's a wonderful thing. I mean, there'll be a lot of people in waiting rooms today and tomorrow because of the storms in the East Coast. I mean, gosh, they're actually closing down some of the trains and transit there, and some of the flights. Well, the storm is going to be one of the bigger ones. It's 3 feet of snow and blizzard conditions, and really, really intense storm happening.
Lucky we live in Hawaii.
We're going to be there in the first week of March in the Midwest in Minneapolis.
Minneapolis is cold.
Yeah.
Cold,
right over
cold.
The book, and then we're going to be on the West Coast in the ending part of February. So
you play Santa Cruz as well as the Bay Area.
Would you go down
to Santa Cruz and different smaller towns as well.
Yeah, we like Santa Cruz because our kids are there. We have our son is a postal clerk in Santa Cruz, and the daughter's a swing dancer, and she also teaches at Palomar Theater, and she's also a bartender at Sir Froggy's and another place called Caroline's. It's like a biker bar, you know.
Busy lady.
Well, when you have a big family like you do, you have how many Hanai kids?
Well, I have one son by birth, and Nancy has two, and we Hanai 12 officially. I didn't change the name, but the reason I Hanai'd them really is so that they could get medical, you know. And over the years, 2,000-3,000 kids, easy, that helped out on the farm. And some kids you have to kick out, you know, and then. They stay too long. Some stay for like, even my brother, I had to kick him out too. He stayed with me for 6 years. In fact, I gave him an old house and I built another house. One of my brothers, my older brother. Yeah.
Oh my.
Sometimes after you kick them out, they come back again.
Sometimes it's hard to get them not from, especially when you have as much food and good stuff as you have at your place, George. It's hard. But you're smart. You get a lot of people who come out to visit, and they'll go out and work in your farm and help out.
And then we share the food. Another thing was good about Uncle Richard's, you know, sharing the food with Uncle Richard is that I had all of these, this food inside. We had, pork. So that's another thing. We made chow siu pork. You know, we roasted on a fire, probably a couple of pans of that. Then I had this other thing. It's a dish where we save the pork blood and all the intestines. So I had to use the liver, the heart, and all of that. Sometimes you make sausage, but we made this dish called dinandaran. We make a couple of pans of that. So lucky for us, and I had all this fish in a freezer frozen. So I think originally I had four big freezers that was full of food. Now we're down to, I think we got only one and a half freezers full of food. So actually I got rid of, you know, a lot of food.
It's hard keeping weight off when you got that kind of food around.
Yeah, I mean we got deer, we got sheep, we got beef, we got pork, We got ducks and we got chickens in the freezer. So
wow. Yeah. And when you were on the road, I mean, you hit New York, and I mean, there couldn't be a place, I think, more different in culture than New York from your ranch or your farm out there in Kahakala.
Kahakala, yeah. Okay. We played at this place called Subculture, and what I like about New York is that, like, they have really good ethnic foods. Like, one of my favorite to eat is Cuban food when we go to New York, you know. I like the fried bananas with the pork and all the dishes like that. And the other one, kind of food that I really like is there, you know, especially in New Jersey, they got probably the best sandwiches. You know, the real, the real sandwiches and real pizza. You know, they got the really fresh cold cuts and stuff like that.
See, that's all fattening.
The thing I like about is they have this cow tongue. That's tongue sandwiches. That's one of my favorite.
You know, you are talking to a vegan here.
I know. I'm sorry.
But I love it. I mean, because you raise the things and you know the things, and you also plant by the moon calendar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You follow the moon calendar, and you're really, really, really conscientious about the way you keep your plants, and also share. You give away so much food. You give away so much.
In fact, right now is Ole, so it's the best time today. This is what I was doing today. It's not a good time for planting, so it's good time for weeding, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
So Ole is weeding?
Yeah, Ole. Ole Kukai, there's about 3 or 4 days of weeding. We're in between moons right now.
Well, the full moon is on February 3rd, I think, so it's coming up.
Yeah. I'm doing a...
I mean, it's full moon, like February 3rd.
In fact, I'm doing a full moon concert at the Bailey House.
Are you?
Yeah,
oh,
on the
good.
7th, yeah. It's going to be a couple of days after the closest one, yeah.
On the 7th, yeah. Yeah, that's great. And you're going to be on the road, but the Nepili Kai events have been years now. You've been doing that for
about
5 years?
About 11 years.
11 years now.
Yeah.
Wow, and that's been amazing because you've kept it there, and they love you, and it's just kind of grown and grown and grown,
well,
hasn't it?
We had a Wednesday show. Now we have a Wednesday and Thursday show. So it's in fact, now, even last week, our Wednesday show, our Thursday show was more full than our Wednesday show, original show. So, you know, we're really building, and at least 1/3 of the people who come to our shows have never been to our shows before. So
wow.
We can see that it's building.
Well, there's a lot of people on island right now. Because when it gets cold, like back right now is in the East Coast, they'd love to come, right? In Canada, of course, you know, the snowbirds. But that's you have a website for that too. That's a separate website.
It's called theslackyshow.com.
Is it Slacky Show?
No, this is Slacky.
Slacky.
SlackyKey Show.com. Slackyshow.com.
And you've got really some of the very best musicians on the islands that have shown up there. And I didn't even mention, we used to not go anywhere without mentioning your Grammys. What, you have 3 or 4 Grammys?
Well, we've been nominated for 7 Grammys and brought home 4 for Best Hawaiian Music. And then we also have another Grammy. My brother-in-law, George Winston, that he gave it to his mom, you know, Mary Winston. She lived with us for a number of years.
Yes, what a sweetheart. And she'd come in here.
Yeah.
You'd bring her in here when you're doing the show in the morning.
Unfortunately, she passed away.
Oh, did she? What a sweetheart.
Ago. Yeah. So we have her.
I didn't know that.
So we have 5 Grammys at our house.
Do you have 5 Grammys?
Yeah.
There was a funny story. We have about 3 minutes before, or 2 minutes before our next guest calls in, but you brought the Grammy through, you're trying to get it through TSA, and it was a metal detector went way
right,
out,
and
right?
And they said, you know, they said that it was a Grammy. I said, yeah, that's what it is. And she didn't believe me. I said, so we had to open up and show it was a Grammy. Because, you know, I guess we're going on the road, and somebody asked us to bring the Grammy to us, so we brought one of the Grammys, and it's actually packed in this really nice box with styrofoam and all that kind of stuff, you know.
So it definitely set off alarms.
Yeah, it definitely did.
Definitely.
But you know, you and just in case people don't know, now there's a law that you can take your instrument as carry-on. You always suggest.
Yeah, I was really lucky because, you know, we have a relationship with Hawaiian Airlines. And most of the airlines that we go through, some of the airlines in the Southwest, Southwest is really good too, but some of the airlines like American would give us static, especially on the East Coast when they wouldn't let us carry a guitar on and whatever. And then I would just, you know, I would carry it right up to the gate, and then I would gate check it. Then I know at least it's in the same plane as
right.
I was, you know.
Oh, yeah, because you don't, I mean, you've lost a couple.
Yeah, I've lost a couple of guitars and, you know, on the road like that. But, Jerry, how is it with you when you guys got to travel on these boats and everything? Do you guys have to worry about losing stuff or anything like that?
We've never lost it. The only time we've lost anything was Hawaiian sent. I mean, they found it, but they sent, when we're going to Tahiti, they sent our luggage to L.A.
Oh, my God.
That took about a week to get down there, but that's the, that's the only time.
And by the time you're coming back to Hawaii, really, right?
Because you take Hawaiian down to Tahiti, that's the only airline that gets there, and it only goes in on Saturday.
That's right. That's so, right.
Yeah, that's the only time you can make
Unless you want to come back through L.A., which isn't, the best choice.
No, no. Unless you want miles.
We've traveled so much and hardly ever lost anything, so.
Which is really a blessing, really.
That's
truly.
Right.
I mean, I've only had a few bags that have been delayed. But it's, again, if you have a good person booking, you know, where you try not to make too many changes and too many plane changes, you know, because there's more chance. And not too many tight connections where you might miss the chance of, if you're running a little tight, you might not make it one plane to another.
Well, we want to, you know, also just remind people, so if you're not doing anything Wednesday or Thursday, we got Herberto Jr., and he's really a master ukulele player.
He's wonderful. I mean, he is recognized by, I think, even Jake Shimabukuro and others as one of the very best.
Right, and then he also taught the ukulele boys in the mid-80s and the 90s, when the boys were only about 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. That's who they learned from. And
From Herb.
Yeah. Because Herb was a best friend with my son. They still are best friends. So Herb would come over and do gigs with my son here, and then, you know, he would give lessons to all these kids. Sometimes they have 2,000 students on a weekend. I wouldn't believe it. Then at our place, he'd have like 100 students coming all day for, you know, 2 days, for Saturdays and Sundays, every time giving lessons to all these kids.
So when you have something good to offer, they come, right?
Well, you know what? There's this give back that musicians do in Hawaii, and I think you're one of the best give back people I know, George, and I know Herb is that way. And there is that give back that people don't see. The teachings that you do, the givings. You started that school of music at
the
Maui.
Institute of Hawaiian Music, yeah.
Yes, the Institute of Hawaiian Music. And, I mean, think the give back that you have given with a very, very busy schedule already. You know, most people couldn't even handle the farm that you've got, let alone trying to be a music and on the road and do the musicians and do the Wednesday and Thursday show and doing all the CDs. And everything you're doing, I mean, you are truly one of the busiest people that I know. I mean, people don't know how crazy busy you really run.
Well, the thing is that, you know, I don't think we're able to do all this if I didn't have what I call an A-team, you know. Like, you just saw Patty Link, she's our publicist, and Mort is our, you know, the guy that does all of the graphics. Did you know that he did the In-N-Out Burger? He was he did the logo for In-N-Out Burger. That's how, you know. And
how did he find you?
I met him for the Rotary. We did some things together with the Rotary. We raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for scholarships for Maui High, all the high schools here in Maui, Lanai and Molokai, and we became great friends after that, you know.
I mean, do have a great team, and Nancy, of course.
Nancy, and then we got the ukulele boys and Sterling Seaton at our show, and then we have Elliot Presswich, which is like our call center and everything in the mainland, and you know, and relationships with all of the radio stations, like you know, with you, Cindy. Thank you so much.
Well, we miss you because, I mean, you were doing the morning show on Island FM KHEI. For a long time, and it just got too much. You were trying to get in here, and you had to do this and that, and then we kept trying. And we'd still love you back anytime you're around, you know. I mean, you'll have to actually come and record the Hawaiian Sunset Show with me sometimes, because, we've got your music on the air, and we love your music.
And I know you have this new radio station, too, the Christian station.
1240
too.
AM. Have you listened to that?
Yeah.
You
I
listen?
Like that. Yeah.
We just got the signal up to good power on 1240 AM and 95.5 on the FM.
Right, thank you.
But we play your music
on
there.
It's called Keve. K-E-V-E.
That means, go ahead.
Keve means the soul, the essence.
Oh, well, that's good, because we call it the spirit.
That's what it means.
That's good. I'm glad you listened. And actually, I want to get them. We got to get that song. You have to get it to me that you and Norton Buffalo do the most beautiful arrangement of Amazing Grace that I have ever heard anywhere.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, well, you and Norton Buffalo was one of the finest harp players in the world, and a friend of mine from Northern California, because he lived in the Valley of the Moon.
Right.
And he passed away, but you were so blessed to make friends with him and connect and do, I mean, truly a beautiful CD.
Thank you so much.
With you and George, and you two together, you and Norton, were just magic together.
But the thing is, we didn't only connect on the music level. We're both gardeners, you know.
I didn't know he was a gardener.
Yeah, we both love to fish and to hunt and all of that stuff. So we're both, you know, really indigenous natives, really. Like he used to know all the back streams to go paddle in between, you know, San Francisco. There's all these backwards. Salmon still run. Yeah, he knew where all the salmon would, and it going into those little streams and stuff like that.
So you spent time with him in Northern California, Valley of the Moon.
Yeah.
Very special area there, Jack London land, Jack London.
Right.
Yeah, that's where Jack London's house and home was back up in that. And I lived just on the other side in Sonoma County.
He used to live in Sonoma, but he moved up to Paradise, you know, eventually.
I didn't know that.
But he knew all the places all on the Bay Area. There's all these small little, nooks and crannies that you can go fishing. It's unbelievable.
He passed away from lung cancer, too young, about 3 years ago. Yeah. Was it 2 or 3 years ago?
He was less than 50. I think he died at 51, 54 years old. He was really young at the time. Yeah,
and it was a surprise. But I think that was the beauty of his singing in yours and doing his harp playing in your guitar, and he learned some Hawaiian music and did.
It was amazing that, you know, there's a song called "Hole Vai Mea," and the words are really hard, like "Kui kakapu ku akaba hanani kikapu ohiluki ni ho." I learned
that song. I know that one. That's a hard one. Yeah.
Yeah, and he knew, and he learned all the words. And what he did, when he went on the road with the Steve Miller Band, he would practice this in the hotel room. So when we got back to the studio, he knew. I said, "Man, well, how did you learn all of that?" Because he listened to me sing it once. You know, he would tape me singing, and then he would actually harmonize with it too. He was just a musician's musician.
Absolutely.
Not only the harmonica, he could play piano, he could play guitar, you know, but he was known for his harmonica.
Yeah, and then that, and so, I mean, I don't even know. I've lost track. How many CDs have you even done now?
Well, if you go back to 8 tracks and everything, over 100, you know.
I put 100 CDs?
CDs,
8 tracks.
8 tracks, 45s, 33, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, you think of that, 100, what a legacy. And your kids.
I wouldn't have been able to do any of this if I didn't have the team with me, you know. Here's a call, somebody calling in.
Yes, I think it's Billy. Is this Billy Yamaguchi?
Yes, it is.
I had the pleasure and honor of meeting you today, Billy, and you are a true artist. Billy has been voted one of the most influential hair designers, but he does it in a way that most people never would think of hair. First of all, I have to say, Billy, you do it with your heart and soul.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. If anything, I'll never forget, you know, watching that movie, The Avatar.
Yes.
You know, hooked in, you just know. I just feel like I've been on recess my entire life, but being serious about another recess, of course.
Well, you're here for a couple of days. You have a few openings at the Olivine Spa today and tomorrow. You're only there, and it's your birthday on Thursday.
Thank you so much.
Well, happy birthday. We've got George Kamoko, and he probably could even sing you happy birthday in Hawaiian here. How would you say happy birthday in Hawaiian to him, George?
Ha'ole lahanao.
Ah.
Ha'ole lahanao. Ha'ole lahanao. Ha'ole lahana o pila. Pila is Billy.
Oh.
Ha'ole lahana.
O pila is Billy?
Yeah, Pili. Pila is Billy.
Pila. Oh, now you know how to say your name in Hawaiian, Billy.
Pila.
Pila.
Pila, yeah.
Oh, thank you so much.
George has won 4 Grammys, so he's you got sung to happy birthday by a 4-time Grammy, one of our best singers here in Hawaii.
Awesome.
You have clients like Jennifer Aniston, Charlize Theron, Julia Roberts, Ellen DeGeneres, Phil Jackson. We had a wonderful conversation about Tony Robbins and Phil Jackson today.
We did. I really appreciate that because Phil has just been nothing but, you know, good to me since, you know, 1999, because he got written up as a Zen of basketball, and then I got written up as Zen of hair, and so our whole relationship started in Ojai, up there in Southern California, and it's just been very, very fortunate to be with him for 5 rings.
Well, he truly is, and he's brought Zen to his life and to the Lakers, and he was blessed to know that he helped the wonderful Sonoma Mountain Genjo-ji Zen Center up at the top of Sonoma Mountain Road, and he blessed them with a donation that made possible a whole new temple up there for them at the top of Sonoma Mountain Road. And what a great gift back to people he is. And I guess you've known him for a long time, and to work with people like that, it's because I think you really honor them and their spirit of who they are. You don't try to change. I was really impressed, Billy, with your hair work that you do, that you really try to get to honor that person's true soul and essence, and you do that through understanding the real principles of feng shui.
Yes, exactly. Because, you know, most of the time when you go to most salons, you know, they're going to end up consulting, and sometimes if they're really talented, they might start sharing with you what their recommendations are, which I feel and would like to say is great. But our whole approach is completely from the inside out, you know, through the five elements, because a lot of people only know the five elements through fire, earth, metal, water, and wood, but they don't know they're identical to the five senses: touch, taste, smell, sight, and hearing. Mm. And even with George, I mean, I'd have to say it's been fascinating to also learn that there is in different in music, like the drums would be considered the fire element area.
Right, right.
Which is basically from the navel to the knees. And somebody had once shared with me, it's like when they put the drums in between the legs, you know, and there was a correlation. And I just felt that, you know, this has become an amazing journey for me in the beauty industry to connect, you know, who people are in the inside and reflect it on the outside, whether it's through a great cut, makeup, you know, coloring technique. And it just has grown legs. It's developed more and more.
Well, you know, I was also impressed, and I actually was almost a little intimidated when I heard, you know, you work with Lady Gaga and Britney Spears and Gwen Stefani and all these people. What do I wear? You know, I was raised in Beverly Hills, and I was used to kind of some people, but a lot of the people and hairstyles in Beverly Hills are a little intimidating and snobbish, and you were anything but that. You were just very, very friendly. You gave me a little shoulder massage while my hair was getting all set up and everything. You know, you were just really, really fabulous.
Well, thank you. We call that vitamin T. A lot of people will speak about vitamin E, and of course D is very popular, but T to me is very, very powerful. Especially, it's important for one to make sure that they know who's going to hug them or handshake them or touch them. Because one of the things that I grew up learning in Japan is bowing. I could see where they don't want to spread, you know, maybe somebody else's negative energy. So I'm a true believer of that. Whoever's going to massage you, whoever's going to ever touch your hair, it's going to be most important that they actually have great energy.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much just because of their resume, so to speak. Because I would like to say a lot of the celebrities that have come in and have gotten feng shuied, whether it's, you know, getting a pedicure or a massage, I'd like to say we've just been very fortunate to be at the right place at the right time for a number of these celebrities to come into Yamaguchi's.
Well, you have the salon in Ventura, is it? Or is it two salons you have?
We have one in Ventura, which we like to say San Buena Ventura because it gives it a little bit of mystique. And then we're at the Four Seasons in Westlake, California with Mr. Murdoch, who just sold your island of Lanai over here. And then, of course, San Diego in Rancho Santa Fe.
In
Southern California. Those are the ones in Southern California.
Yeah, and people can go to your website. Your product you have is fabulous, by the way, too. What's your website, Billy?
Ours is YamaguchiBeauty.com.
YamaguchiBeauty.com, and they can call and make an appointment to see you if they hurry, because you're almost full up at 875-1313. That's the Olivine Spa at the Gateway, right there at the shops at Wailea Gateway Shops, upstairs in a beautiful spa run by Cecilia Hershek, who does just a fabulous new spa.
Unbelievable spa.
Yeah. And I have to say, it was just such a treat. I've never quite had a haircut and hair like that today as I had. And again, people can call 875-1313, Cecilia Herchick's Olivine Spa. And Billy, I'm just so impressed with the work you do and the way you do it. I mean, you bring a hugely wonderful spiritual element to your work. And I really felt blessed to meet you. And
Cindy, you're giving me chills. I really appreciate that. And I look forward to our paths, I'd like to say, crossing again, because, you know, I mean, you're an amazing person. I really appreciated you reading me with all of your insights, you know, and your knowledge that you have done traveling globally. Matter of fact, I even text that back to my wife on how I appreciated you speaking very nicely about our two children. So Thank you so much.
Thank you, and a big aloha to you.
I accept it very much.
Thank you.
And aloha to all the people out there.
We'll see you next time. Again, call 875-1313. Bye-bye.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Billy.
All right. Sayonara. Thank you, George, so much.
And thank you, Pila.
That.
I hope we get to see you, too. Are you going to be here Wednesday and Thursday?
I won't. I'm sorry. I'm already on the mainland.
Okay, well, we'd invite you to come to
but
the show.
But I'll pass the frost. I will guarantee you that, 100%.
I'll get a CD and his book, his new movie, Seeds of Aloha, and I'll send that to you. I'll get a copy to send to you, Billy. You'll love his movie.
I appreciate that.
Okay. Thank
George,
you so much.
Thank you so much, as well as you, Cindy.
Okay,
aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha.